Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. You know, it seems like it's been forever since we were last on the air, but it's only been a month since our last show, which was our boat and water safety episode that featured survivors of that horrific boating accident that happened on Lake Oconee this summer and claimed the life of a four-year-old little girl. Again, I want to say our condolences are with the family as they grieve their loss. And I want to say thank you to the participants that joined the panel for that show. You know, we received a ton of positive feedback from that episode, and no doubt that show went a long way in helping to prevent a similar tragedy from happening on the water. So thank you again to the panel and to my friend Jason Timothy for trusting me and the Artist First Radio Network with that sensitive but important topic. All right, so you guys, this year is flying right on by. We're already well into October, which is my favorite month, by the way, but not just because it's my birthday month. It's also because pretty much no matter where you are in the world, October is known for having some really gorgeous weather. The temperature is, you know, just right. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. Even here in San Juan, the weather is perfect right now. You know, you still get enough sun to get a great tan and enjoy the beach without frying. And you're also getting this really nice, cool breeze that sort of refreshes you throughout the day. And I bet wherever you're listening in from that you've been enjoying this weather too. And, you know, by the way, thank you so much for tuning in for tonight's show. I promise I'm going to make it worth your while. All right. Okay. So tonight's episode was supposed to talk about the rising unemployment rate of college graduates. But I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? No. Forget all of that. I'm not going to regurgitate the news to you guys. We all know that the economy and the jobs market is really messed up right now. You know, whenever you have college graduates begging for work, that's when you know stuff is really messed up. You know, everybody already knows the state of our union right now. We don't need to watch the news or listen to the news to figure it out. We're all living this, right? So as you know, I'm sure you know, right now we're in the middle of a government shutdown. And I decided to talk about this a little bit on the show. I really want to break this down in simple terms of what exactly a government shutdown means, you know, in terms of its impact. Because I think there's a lot of people out there who don't fully understand how a government shutdown impacts all of us. It doesn't just impact federal workers. So I'm going to break that down a little bit. And so, you know, bear with me if you already know this stuff. But basically, a government shutdown happens whenever Congress can't come to an agreement on how to fund federal agencies ahead of the new fiscal year. No funding means that there's no operations. And that means that hundreds of thousands of federal workers get furloughed. They're basically told, all right, you guys stay home, don't work. By the way, you're not going to get paid, at least not right now. You know, so it's really dicey for a lot of people, my former colleagues. Meanwhile, if you're fortunate enough to be considered an essential employee, those are your people like your TSA officers that work at the airport, air traffic controllers, border patrol. They still have to show up to work, but guess what? They're not getting paid. So they're showing up to work without pay because they have the benefit of being classified as an essential employee. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky, and this is the part that's been making headlines lately. And speaking of that, I want to shout out again my friend Jason Timothy in Macon, Georgia, who sent me this article because you guys know how I feel about the news. I don't keep up with the news. I don't watch the news. As I've mentioned on this show before, I have carefully curated my timeline and my news feed across my socials to weed out anything related to politics, government, economy, this current administration, I don't want to hear it. You know, the only reason why I even heard about the government shutdown is because someone within earshot of me had on the news briefly before I made them turn it off. So that's how I even found out about the shutdown. But like I was saying before, this is the tricky part about this current shutdown. The OMB, known as the Office of Management and Budget, they recently updated their shutdown guidance, and they quietly, on the low, deleted a key line that used to guarantee that all furloughed federal employees will get back pay once the shutdown ends. You see what I mean? So, and just a little background on that, that guarantee came from a law that was enacted back in 2019. It's called GEFTA, which stands for the Government Employee Fair Treatment Act. GEFTA was passed after that record-breaking 35-day shutdown that we had under Trump the first time. This was geared and put in place. It was geared towards making sure Congress, once they reopened the government, that everyone, whether they were furloughed or not, would eventually get their back pay. But now the OMB has taken that reassurance out of their official documents. And like I said, they did this on the low, or at least tried to. And according to a report by GovExec, that change signals a possible new interpretation of GEFTA. And it's one that says that, you know what? Actually, back pay isn't automatic, guys. Congress might have to explicitly approve it each time. And that's huge, because if this interpretation holds, if it holds up, that means that roughly 620,000 plus workers who are furloughed right now might not get paid for the time that they've already missed from work. That is, unless Congress specifically writes it into law later. And you have, you know, lawmakers who are, you know, making a fuss about this. Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland, he's calling foul. He said basically that, look, this is the law. There's nothing that this current administration can do to change that. Senator Tim Kaine from, what state is he? Virginia. He even spoke out. He hinted that there'd be some possible legal action if OMB continues with this new stance that they're taking, and that it, you know, if that continues to stand. So the good thing is that there are at least some lawmakers out there who are advocating for federal workers in this environment. And kudos to them, because this is a difficult environment to speak out and hold truth to power. So definitely appreciate Tim Kaine speaking out, Senator Van Hollen. Now, I want to say this, too. For the everyday citizen, I know you guys may think, well, listen, I hate that. You know, we're in a shutdown. I get it. But I'm not a federal employee, so this really doesn't impact me. Oh, but it does. And let me explain to you why. Because all those federal employees, they're the same people who are processing your passport, your Social Security claims, your federal loans. All these people are stuck at home waiting. They're just waiting. They're sitting this out. And when they stop working, it slows down everything for everybody. And think about all of the local businesses that are near military bases and federal offices. They're taking a hit too. The restaurants, the dry cleaners, the coffee shops, because fewer people are around. You know, they're not at work. There's no one around to spend money to go to lunch, to run errands on their lunch break. So local businesses are feeling the pinch for this too. And the longer this shutdown drags on, the more it's going to chip away at people's trust. We're already have basically lost trust in the government anyway. We've lost trust in the government. We've lost trust in democracy. And, you know, in this system as a whole. You know, so even if you're playing by the rules, trying to do the right thing, things just don't seem to be really fair anymore. So the bottom line about all this government shutdown stuff is this just isn't about politics. This is about people's lives. Real families are trying to figure out, how are we going to pay the rent? How are we going to pay our mortgage? How are we going to keep groceries in the refrigerator while Washington argues over all this mess and over all this budget stuff? And now, even the guarantee and the promise that the federal employees will eventually get their back pay for all of their lost time, now that's on shaky ground. So it's just, there's a lot going on. And here's the real question. If government workers can't count on getting paid for doing their jobs, and they're being forced to stay home without pay until all this stuff is sorted out, what does that really say about how we value public service in this country? Do y'all understand now why I got the hell on and why I retired early? Who has time for this? Playing these types of political games, messing with people's livelihoods and families, nobody has time for that. It's crazy. Y'all remember, okay, so do y'all remember the show from back in the 70s, Good Times? I know my people do. I don't know if white folks and Hispanic people watch Good Times, but that was my show. It was one of my favorite shows growing up. Okay, so America as a whole now is Good Times. There's a lot of people who are scratching and surviving right now. There's a lot of people who are experiencing temporary layoffs. There's a lot of people who are hanging in a chow line. I'm serious. Thanks to this billionaire's economy that we're in currently, and you know that's what they're calling it, right? They're calling it a billionaire's economy because that's about the only class of people who are really thriving right now. The elite and the ultra wealthy, they have an advocate in the White House. So they're good. Trust me, they're good. Even better. But if you're an average family, an average middle class family, maybe even upper middle class in some cases, you're really feeling the pinch right now. You're probably struggling a little bit right now. And I hate to sound pessimistic, but things are probably going to get much worse before they get better. If you read your Bible, you know what I'm talking about. If these aren't the last days, I don't know what is. Let me tell you something. I was on a walk last week with my friend. This is right here in San Juan. And we saw on our way back home where there was one of those pop-up vaccination centers that had been erected. It was near one of the hospitals in the neighborhood. You know, it's like those pop-up centers, they're like a big white tent, you know, that they have the a bunch of tables inside and stuff like that, chairs. But this one was still empty, and you could tell that they had just put it up. And my friend said, you know, these are the same kinds of vaccination centers that were around during COVID when the vaccine started to come out. And I remember seeing some of those same type of, you know, pop-up vaccination centers in Saudi when the Moderna vaccines were being made available. I don't want this to be true, but I really feel like there's another pandemic on the horizon. And if that's true, it's likely going to be much worse than it was last time. Because think about it, there's not exactly, and I'm trying to be kind here, there's not exactly a great history of this current administration's coordination as it relates to disaster preparedness. So what I would offer to you is to make sure that you and your family and your household have your own disaster plan in place. You know, right now, while everyone is distracted with other things and other stuff, right now, where everything is okay, relatively, go ahead and make sure you guys are stocked up on things that you know you're going to need in the event of a shortage. Bottled water, radios, batteries, canned goods, non-perishables, stuff like that. First aid kits, toilet paper, ammunition. You know, all the things that you think you're going to need if there's some type of shortage. Just remember, just re-jog in your mind what happened last time and what you could have done better, because we're likely going to face that type of situation again. Have a plan in place in the event of a sudden emergency and loss of communication. The cell phone towers are down or something like that, and you're separated from your loved ones. You know, your spouse may be at work, your children may be at school. Have a plan in place for you heads of household. Have a conversation with your family about contingency plans and what stance you're going to take about the vaccine in the wake of, you know, another pandemic. Are you and your household going to take the vaccine? Are you going to not take the vaccine? Go ahead and have those conversations now. I'll be honest with you. If it comes down to that, I likely will not accept any more vaccinations. The only reason why I took the vaccination the first time was because I had just lost my mother to COVID. And this was early in the pandemic. She wasn't able to get the vaccine because it was still in development. And you know, also because I was a federal employee, and I was gearing up. At that time, I was gearing up for my very first diplomatic assignment to Saudi Arabia. And by not getting the vaccine, I would be putting my career and everything I had worked for up to that point at risk. You know, so I made a calculated decision to get the jab, as my friend Craig would say. I need to call Craig, too. I haven't talked to him in a while. But, yeah, if I'm being honest, I also took that vaccine because back then, at that phase, COVID was still so new. No one knew what was really going on. There wasn't a lot of credible resources for solid data and information. We were all scared of being infected, you know, especially those of us who lost loved ones. So it was just a lot going on. I don't regret it, but like I said, I seriously doubt that I'll be taking another vaccine if it comes to that. I'm just going to pass on that. So anyway, if you recall in one of my previous episodes, I'm pivoting. In one of my previous episodes, I encouraged people to apply for their passports if they don't already have one. And if you do have one, definitely make sure it's good for, I would say, at least the next 2 or 3 years. Really, 2 years, now that I think about it, 2 years is kind of pushing it. You know, passports are good for 10 years when you get them. So if your current passport expires before 2028, I would go ahead and get that renewed ASAP. Hopefully you're not in that situation, but you see how things are trending just just 10 months into this new administration. So I would strongly recommend making sure that, you know, you're squared away in all of your documents and your passports for yourself and for your household. Okay. Now, here's a question a lot of folks are wondering and asking about right now. Can I still get a passport during the government shutdown right now? The short answer to that is yes. Yes, you can. Passport services are still running, and that's because they're mostly funded by fees, not by this regular federal budget that Congress failed to pass. So, in other words, like when you pay for your passport and you pay those fees or what have you, that money is what's keeping that system moving. So the State Department has said that both passport and visa operations are still going here in the U.S., at the embassies overseas. All of those operations are continuing as long as there's enough fee money in the reserve. But here's the catch, though. There are some locations that may face more delays than others because of reduced staffing or some type of limited building access, especially if those particular offices are inside federal facilities that are closed down by the shutdown. So it just depends on the location. But largely, if you're traveling soon, you don't have to panic. Routine applications are still being processed. You just have to plan ahead and just expect a lower turnaround time than normal. All right? So the bottom line is passport offices are still open. But, you know, like I said, things might move a little slower until Washington gets back, you know, solid and get their act together. All right. What else? I'm pivoting from that. Oh, I want to tell you guys, I have a theory about something. This one might get me in a little trouble, but you know me. I tend to connect dots that folks just, you know, make folks just a little bit uncomfortable. So I have a theory that the main reason why the United States still doesn't have universal health care or free health care, despite being one of the wealthiest nations on earth, I feel like that has less to do with politics and more to do with control. Think about the U.S. labor market. They need workers. And nothing keeps people tied to a job quite like the fear of losing their health care. Because think about it, there are millions of Americans who are out there working at jobs they can't stand, and they're not doing it for the paycheck. They're doing it for the insurance card. They're clocking in every day, not out of passion, but out of necessity. And it's not even about the paycheck, really, because heaven forbid that they have a child that needs an ER visit or, you know, even worse, around a chemo or something like that, and trying to deal with that without any type of medical coverage could be detrimental to a family's finances. Now, imagine if health care were free. Imagine if it were free and it was universal and available to everyone, like it is in most industrialized nations. I think you'd have a massive wave of people just quitting their jobs and starting businesses, launching nonprofits, writing books, painting murals, you know, actually pursuing things that they love. That's what I think. I think you see an explosion of innovation, creativity, a lot of small business growth. I really do. But that's too much like right. We couldn't have that. We couldn't have that, could we? No. That's just too much. That would disrupt our status quo that we're used to. Because that would mean fewer people are dependent on these corporate jobs. There are fewer people to fill these cubicles. And you got a lot more people empowered to work for themselves. And if the people are empowered, that just might threaten the big guys, all the corporations, the pharmaceuticals, even a lot of government structures, all that stuff that thrives on dependency. So that's my theory. I just call it like it is. I think the system needs workers. I think it needs consumers. I think it needs patients, like hospital patients. This economy, the way it is, it runs on people just being comfortable enough to survive, but too afraid to leave the safety net of employer-provided health care benefits. That's what I think. That's my opinion. Now, I'm not saying be a revolutionary and you know, quit your jobs and all of that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just asking you to think about who really benefits from keeping health care locked behind employment. The closest we ever got to something even resembling universal health care was the Affordable Care Act, which they love to call Obamacare to scare people and to, you know, just be fucked up. And, you know, people still act a fool about the Affordable Care Act today. I think it's on its last leg. I think it's still in place. I don't know how much longer it will be. I hope it continues. There's a lot of people that's relying on that coverage, But yeah, a lot of people still act a fool about Obamacare to this day. And whenever I reference it, I try to make a point to call it the Affordable Care Act. Yes, it was, you know, enacted into law when President Obama was president, but I think to call it Obamacare is to just make people feel some type of way unnecessarily, you know, if you happen to not support him and all of that. See, anyway, I'm going to move on. This is why I shouldn't watch the news. This is why I don't watch the news. It gets me started. It gets me on these tangents. And the next thing you know, I'm just talking shit about the whole system on live radio. Okay, so before I say something that makes me just kind of like mysteriously disappear, I'm just going to hush. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you what life's really been like since early retirement. So stay tuned. You're listening to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry.
Hi, I'm James Baller of Artist First Radio, and I would like to tell you about a fascinating new book from Crime Beat's Ron Chepsik and co-author Mike Rowe. It's titled Robin Hood of the Hood, The Life and Times of Teddy Rowe, Policy Kingpin, and it's published by Strategic Media Books. The book is a historical account of Theodore Teddy Rowe, who courageously fought the Chicago Mafia, more commonly known as the Outfit, for control of the lucrative policy racket in the Windy City. Policy, often called the numbers, is a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery, played mostly in poor and working-class neighborhoods in the United States. In policy, a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. For decades, policy had been a staple in the black community, but when the white mob flexed its power in the late 1940s, many policy kings knuckled under the pressure. Not Teddy Rowe. Rowe famously told mob bosses that he'd rather die than give up control of his operation. Robin Hood of the Hood chronicles an exciting chapter of Chicago history. Go to the Kindle store at Amazon and buy it for just $2.99. For information about this book and other titles, please go to strategicmediabooks.com. That's strategicmediabooks.com.
Looking for your next car? Amazon Autos has you covered. With just a few clicks, you can shop a wide selection of new vehicles, compare prices, read reviews, and even arrange pickup or delivery. Just like ordering anything else on Amazon. It's the future of car buying. Simple, transparent, and all online. Backed by Amazon's trusted network and partnering with local dealerships, Amazon Autos is redefining how we shop for cars. Visit amazon.com/autos and drive into the future today.
Welcome to another broadcast of Spiritual Concerns, the Deborah Ruffini Show on Artist First Radio Network. We're live from England on Saturdays and Sundays, 3 p.m. New York, 8 p.m. London. All past shows are podcasts, find them at artistfirst.com. I'll be your host, where issues relating to the spiritual matters of concern will be largely examined and discussed. Enjoy the show.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Jerry.
All right, welcome back, guys. You're still tuned in to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, broadcasting worldwide on the Artist First Radio Network. Hey, thanks for sticking with us through the break. If you're just joining us before the break, I shared my little theory, and I use that word loosely, but I shared my little theory about why universal healthcare in America is still sitting in the maybe one day pile. And let's just say I may have ruffled a few corporate feathers with that one, but I don't care. Hey, you look, somebody's got to tell the truth, right? All right, so we're going to shift gears a bit and dive into what's life been like since I stepped away from the 9-to-5 grind. We're talking early retirement, freedom, and what it really means to wake up on your own terms. So I'm going to share some lessons, a few surprises, and talk about some of the things that no one warns you about when you make this type of move. So earlier I talked about how a lot of people stay in jobs primarily for the healthcare benefits, but people also stay in jobs for many other reasons. You know, I never dreamed about being a logistician or working for the federal government. I didn't. I'm a creative person. I love to write. I love to sing. I love to perform. I love to take ideas from an intangible form, like in your thoughts, and bring it to life on a page, as a script, as a story, as a poem, as a song. I love to make people laugh. I like to entertain. I used to indulge in these passions of mine when I was younger. Somewhere along the way, growing up and, you know, dating, being a young adult, finding my way, I just eventually stopped pursuing my passions, my gifts. And I started doing other things. And those other things weren't necessarily passions of mine, but looking back, they were things that were necessary as part of my growth and development. I remember how the federal job came about. I remember how that all worked out. I was working on my MBA at Mercer University, and I was like just a few months shy of graduating. I was almost done. And by that time in my life, I had become pretty good at networking, and I had a pretty extensive social network. The assistant director, I think she was either the assistant director or the director of career services. She reached out to me, and she told me that some hiring managers from the Department of Defense were, they were planning to come to the campus soon, and they wanted to set up interviews with a few of Mercer's top students in the MBA program. So, you know, given my reputation and my GPA, she encouraged me to interview. I'll be honest, at first, I wasn't really excited about it. I remember it. I was like, I don't want no federal job. And at that time, you know, I remember I had aspirations to be a corporate executive at like a Fortune 500 company. I just didn't see working a federal job. That never crossed my mind. It was never an aspiration. So I was kind of a snob about it at first. But the director, she was like, no, look, you definitely want to interview with them. You know, this is for a 3-year internship with tiered promotions and raises. And this is something that's going to set you up for a great career with the DOD. So I listened to her. I had sense. You know, I was very opinionated, but I had some sense. And I told her I'd interview. And ever since that interview, Jehovah has blessed my career. They loved me at the interview. They said, we definitely want to hire you. Let us know when you'll be graduating with your MBA. We can't bring you on until you have your MBA degree conferred. So that was like 2-3 months away. But, yeah, I had a blessed career. I was fast-tracked. I out-promoted all of my peers, all of whom were more knowledgeable than me. Seriously, they were more knowledgeable than me about logistics and about program management to this day. But I was the one that went up the ladder. And, you know, I was grateful for that. You know, a lot of Black folks kind of view their ethnicity as an obstacle or hurdle. And I understand why. I really do. Just because of the way that the country is set up. So I get it. But I had parents who didn't raise me to have that point of view. I was always taught to embrace my difference and to make it work for me, not against me. I remember what my mom always said to me. She said, they want to make you a token in. She said, if they want to make you a token in, make sure you get paid damn good for it. And so that was, you know, that was just my approach. And honestly, I think my ethnicity had a lot to do with my promotions. And, you know, that and my ability to navigate politically, how I present myself, you know, I look the part. being handsome and looking good in the suit certainly didn't hurt. You know, how I conduct myself in meetings and in boardrooms. I remember something else my mom said. My mom was a very wise woman, just very, very common sage, wise sense. She said, and the way I say this is going to sound, this is just how she said it, but I know what she meant, but I know how it could sound to other people. But anyway, she said, no one will ever know how stupid you are if you learn how to shut up and just smile. And that took me a long way, because there were many a times I was in boardrooms. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I just looked the part, and I sat there and I looked handsome in my suit and I smiled and nodded. And sometimes you have to do that until you can get your bearings, until you can, you know, prove yourself and get up to par with the things you need to be up to par on. But, yeah, so I had a lot working for me in my career, and I was able to enjoy a lot of success. But despite all of that, there was always this one thing that followed me in every position, every promotion, every pay raise. And that was the fact that I was not happy. Not really. I wasn't really happy. I wasn't happy because I didn't really enjoy my work. You know, I wasn't even always the best at it, but I knew how to maneuver corporate terrain. It doesn't matter if it was domestically here in the States or internationally. I knew how to maneuver that corporate terrain. You could place me anywhere, and I could just adapt. But remember, at heart, I'm a performer. I know how to look the part. I know how to act the part, even when I don't know what the hell is going on. There's a scripture in Proverbs that says, your gift will make room for you. Your gift will place you in front of great people, something to that effect. So all this time, while I was progressing in my career, doing work that didn't really move me, it was important work, but it didn't move me. But nonetheless, I was progressing. I just kept progressing. I didn't know it, but I was operating in my gift. I didn't even realize it. Excuse me. I didn't even realize it. But I always felt empty, and I always felt like an imposter. And I didn't really fully understand why I felt that way at the time. In retrospect, things become clearer, but I had the status. I had the lifestyle. I made the six figures. I had all of that. Why wasn't I happy? I thought maybe the imposter syndrome was the culprit. You know, maybe it was some sort of success guilt from knowing that there were other people much more knowledgeable, not more qualified, more knowledgeable than I was in these positions. But looking back, it wasn't that. You know, it was that creative side of me, that authentic part of me. It wasn't being nurtured. I had kind of sidelined it. Not even kind of, I did sideline it. I wasn't writing my poems. I wasn't writing music. I wasn't writing my stories that I used to write, these really intense, erotic short stories. I wasn't doing any of my artistry. I just sort of subverted all of that creativity to become this corporate person. And my goals had started to become centered around career progression. You know, it started to become an addiction. Like, how high can I go? Like, I want to go to the top. I remember one of my last goals, and this is a goal I had at the start of this year. I wanted to make it to senior executive service. That's the highest civilian level in federal employment. And I was about two and a half, three steps away from achieving that. And I wasn't going to stop until I got it. all in the name of ambition and chasing titles and more promotions and all that stuff. Meanwhile, I'm noticing my stress level changing. I'm looking at my body. I always had a hot body. I was a little skinny when I was younger, but, you know, once I got 24, 25, hot body. And so I just became accustomed to that. I was starting to lose my toneness. Where is this dad bod coming from? Why is my stomach doing this when I sit down? I don't understand. What's happening? Clothes are starting to get tighter. And I'm starting to get these weird aches in my body out of nowhere. Not to mention, this was around the time Trump got reelected the second time, and he started with his bullshit with Doge and all the layoffs and all. I just remember taking a long look at myself in the mirror, and I was like, Andre, first of all, fix your body, because this is not going to work. Fix your body. We don't do this. And then second of all, what are you even doing? All money ain't good money. So I made a decision to walk away and pursue a more purpose-driven life. Now I only do what my spirit leads me to do. I'm enjoying being a radio host of an international radio show. I've written 2 books since retiring. I'm now working on my 5th book, my 5th publication, and some accompanying digital content to go along with that. We should be available before the end of the year if I don't procrastinate. So I'm really enjoying all of this. You know, I enjoy being a recording artist. I've released 2 albums and numerous singles. And I'm working on a comedy album about my life that will probably be out sometime next year. And I'm quietly and stealthily becoming a YouTube sensation. Shh, don't tell anybody. But I don't say any of that to boast. I really don't. It's just to make the point that it took me 46 years, but I'm finally living in my purpose and in my passion, and I'm enjoying the journey along the way. I've chased the vain ambitions like promotions and paycheck. None of that stuff moves me anymore. What I chase now is impact. What impact am I having on people's lives? Who am I inspiring? Whose lives am I improving? That's the stuff that's important to me now. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not all glamorous. And I miss the 6-figure check. I do. And it can get a little scary at times in this climate, not having the security of a 6-figure income and being responsible for making your own 6-figure living and using your own ingenuity and manage your own health care insurance options and your own retirement strategy options. But like anything else, you make adjustments and you adapt accordingly. Even before I retired, I was slowly adopting a minimalist lifestyle. I was slowly starting to purge myself of unnecessary material things. And plus, you know, once you've had all the things, the cars, the condos, the name brand this, the name brand that, it's all nice to have. I'm not going to lie. It's nice to have it, but none of it really, at the end of the day, makes you happy. Not really. What really makes you happy is peace and stability, having your health, having a sound mind, having people in your life, even if it's just 1 or 2, who truly care about you, who love you unconditionally. They want the best for you. They want to see you happy. Doing what you love every day. Waking up and being excited to get your day started. Not waking up and being like, oh, I gotta deal with this shit. You know, who wants to wake up dealing with it? I don't care how much money you make. Who wants to wake up saying, "Ugh, I don't feel like dealing with this shit." Who wants to wake up saying that? You know? But yeah, just having people in your life that truly care about you and want the best for you. They want to see you happy and doing the things you love and being excited when you wake up, being in love, whatever form that takes for you, that makes sense for you and feels good to you. Being kind to other people, being kind to yourself, being able to say, "I'm sorry" to someone without it tasting like poison in your mouth. Having enough humility to say to someone that you hurt that, "Look, I wish I had handled that better. I'm sorry I hurt you." You know, when you're having a disagreement or a breakdown in communication with someone and you say some really awful things to them, but then somehow you come to your senses and you realize that you really hurt the other person by what you said. A lot of times we end up saying something like, "Oh, I was really upset. I didn't mean what I said," or "I was really drunk. I didn't mean that," or "I was in a really dark place back then. I don't know why I said that. I didn't mean it." What I've learned over the years is that regardless of what emotional state we may have been in at the time, we did mean it. We did. When it comes to our families and people who we are intimately connected with, a lot of times we know exactly what to say to bring them to their knees. We know their weakness. We know their kryptonite. True love is being able to disagree with someone vehemently, to have a knockdown drag out and still not go there, to not exploit their vulnerable places or go for the juggler, all in the name of trying to win an argument. That's when you know you really, truly love someone. That's when you know you love yourself, because really it takes a level of self-mastery to refrain from that type of emotional warfare. This is all stuff I wish I knew earlier in life, but you know, that's just not how life goes. We're here to learn. We're here to grow. We're here to evolve spiritually. And the way we do that is by going through some really harsh and difficult things sometimes. Yes, God puts us here to enjoy life and have life and all of that. But in this journey, we also got to learn what it is to suffer and to be broken and to be hurt by people we love and to feel the sting of betrayal, to experience loss, to struggle sometimes, and to want to give up, and to be tested as far as we could bear, and have our faith tested beyond comprehension, and at the end of the day, and at the end of it all, still give glory to God, and still be able to say, "God is good," still be able to say, "God, I trust you. Though he slay me, I would still wait. I will argue my case before his face." He would then become my salvation, for no godless person may come in before him. Y'all remember the story of Job? All the things that befell him. He lost his children. He lost his livelihood. He lost his health. Even his wife was acting a fool. He went through it. And he went through his moments where he was bitter and he was angry, just like anyone else would be. He went through all of those changes. But at the end of it, he humbled himself before the Lord, and he praised him in the middle of his suffering with boils all over his body after having lost his children, his wife acting a fool. And remember what his wife told him? His wife said, "Are you still holding firmly to your integrity? Curse God and die." And I love what Job said to her. He said, "You are talking like one of the senseless women. Should we accept only what is good from the true God and not also accept what is bad?" And in all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. Now, I know it may not be to the extent that Job was tested. That's a lot. I don't know many people who could withstand those type of blows that Job took. But we all have to face our own unique trials and tribulations. That saying, what God has for you, people always try to attribute that to just material stuff and worldly things and accomplishments, but it also means trials and challenges too. We all have to come here with something. Some people, it may be cancer. Some people, it may be really, 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 really challenging parents or no parents. One of mine is being gay. I so wish I was not gay. I don't want to be gay. I think the lifestyle is stupid. But that was what God sent me here to bear and to make peace with and to embrace and to learn to love myself, even though that's not what I want to be. We all have to come here with something. Thank God it was just being gay. Can you imagine if I was an amputee or had cancer or leukemia or just, it could have been a whole lot of stuff. And I'm going to complain about being gay as my cross to bear? Please, I'll bear it all day long, all day. It could have been a number of things. You know, so it wasn't my intention to preach today, you know, but what's that scripture, out of the heart flows the issues of life? You have to be obedient to the Spirit, you know. God's word never returns void. So, you know, just let God have his way. He's the one who gave me this platform in the first place. Let him have his way. And just be kind to people, even the assholes. We're all carrying something. You just never know how far a little bit of kindness or a little smile can, you know how far that can go in someone's life. It doesn't cost anything. We're living in a time right now where being mean and being in vogue, you know, being mean is just like regular now. It's just like, yeah, be mean, be a dick. You know, it's looked upon as strength, but it's not really strength. It's weakness. It's weakness. So don't fall for that. There's one more thing I want to say before I end tonight's show. If there's someone in your life that you've not forgiven for hurting you, let the shit go. Seriously, let it go. It's been long enough. How has holding on to all of that served you? Do you feel better? Your health is good? Let it go. Let the shit go. I promise you, you're going to feel so much better once you let all that go. And that don't mean you have to call them and say, I forgive you, and da da da. You don't have to even talk to them. Forgive them in your heart. Forgive them in your mind and in your body. Talk to God about it, saying, Lord, I don't want to carry this no more. Here, you take it. You carry my burdens. It says that in your word. So here, I'm giving this to you. I don't want it. I'm not going to get cancer for nobody. I'm not going to get all these illnesses for nobody for holding on to grudges and unforgiveness and all of that. It's not worth it. It's just toxic emotions. If you leave toxic emotions in your body for too long, it is going to turn into sickness. Do you understand that? So I really hope you hear me on that. All right, listen. That's our show for tonight. I'm not going to go on and on. I appreciate you guys spending some time with me this evening. I really do. I told you I was going to make it worth your while. Be sure to tune in to our next episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. My show airs every second Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern, okay, right here on the Artist First Radio Network. So thank you for listening, and good night, everybody.